You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The Green Party's Electoral Strengthening Democracy Amendment Bill has recently been drawn, allowing topics of electoral reform in Aotearoa to be brought to the surface. The most talked about part of the bill right now is the lowering of the voting age to 16, which would see New Zealand join countries like Scotland, Austria, Argentina and Brazil, amongst others, in having that age as the minimum. Other aspects of the bill include enabling voters of Māori descent to change role type at any time, implementing donation transparency, and implementing the 2012 MMP review recommendations. To learn more, I spoke to the Green spokesperson for electoral reform, Gora Skaraman, first asking for a quick rundown on the bill as a whole.
Yeah, so my Strengthening Democracy Members Bill aims to bring together a suite of electoral reforms that have been recommended over time by independent bodies like the Electoral Commission, the Justice Committee, even the Supreme Court and the Waitangi Tribunal, but have been ignored by successive governments. So the idea is that we are proud of our MMP democracy, but that there are definite ways that democratic rights have either been eroded or haven't, you know, been implemented, that we know about and should act upon so that our democracy is as inclusive and equal as it can be.
The main aspect of this bill that people are currently focusing on is the lowering of the voting age to 16. What sort of changes could we see in electoral results if this bill went through?
Yeah, so the starting point of this, to some extent, is that we're actually breaching the Bill of Rights Act by disenfranchising 16 and 17-year-olds. It has been found to be their right. The Court of Appeal has affirmed that. It is in the Bill of Rights Act. But beyond that, this is a group of people who are going to be most impacted by policies and laws that are passed right now, because they're going to keep living and keep experiencing either the harm or benefits of policies that we could be implementing or that we may be ignoring right now. It's also a known fact that younger people are less likely to engage with electoral democracy, which doesn't mean that they're not engaged with what's going on around them and that they don't care about issues, but they are less likely to vote. So that's sort of 18, 19 in the early 20s. So the idea of having young people engaged with democracy and enrolment to vote while they're still at school, while they're all still together, there is infrastructure around civics education, which we're also pushing for, and before they disperse into the workforce or uni, they can at least enrol and they can at least know their rights and the way that democracy functions. It is more likely that people will then vote for a lifetime. So we know that those who don't enrol aren't going to enrol, and those who do and they vote at that first election where they are eligible are most likely to keep voting. It's better for all of us if our democracy has more people actually engaged.
Some of the issues that I've seen brought forward by the opposition has included that this could put unneeded pressure on young people to vote if they don't know what they're talking about, and could lead to issues such as votes being influenced by their parents or internet misinformation. Do you think that these concerns are valid?
Just to start with the internet disinformation one, the answer to the fact that we have disinformation campaigns callously being spread online isn't to disenfranchise people and stop people from being able to participate in democracy. There are myriads of ways that we can address that, and that's what we should be engaging with, because it's actually affecting older voters disproportionately rather than younger voters who are sort of digital natives. So that's a very odd argument. but in terms of, you know, do they know enough? You know, are they strong enough? Are they smart enough? Well, those are the same types of arguments that have been brought up to oppose enfranchisement of various groups, including women, Māori, non-landowners. So we've seen this one before. But the idea is that those who can vote currently don't have to prove that they know enough, that they're sort of mentally strong enough or engaged enough. And we don't actually test anyone in order to have them access their fundamental rights. We have fundamental rights because we're human, not because we're good or strong or smart. And so to impose that on young people is perverse.
This bill also calls for the allowance of prisoners to vote. How might those people be voting in the next elections if this bill went through?
Yeah, so again, the starting point in terms of full enfranchisement of people in prisons is that this is a breach of fundamental rights. So the Supreme Court has told us that, the Waitangi Tribunal has told us that it's the breach of Te Tiriti o Waitangi, because we know that our justice system does disproportionately target Māori and imprison Māori. So when we start to think about the types of people who are most likely to be in our overcrowded prisons, we're talking about disenfranchising Māori, other people of colour, and poor communities. So it starts to paint a picture of why it's actually, again, perverse and an absolute slippery slope when we start to say that the state can take away basic human rights through the prison system. That's not what our justice system is for. It's actually there to keep communities safe. And we know that the best way to do that is through rehabilitation and reintegration of people back into the community. Most people that are in our prisons are going to rejoin communities, and sort of disenfranchising them, cutting them off from communities, dehumanising and degrading them isn't going to be the thing that gets us there. And we actually know that. I've worked in the criminal justice system. I've seen parole boards repeatedly ask people to prove that they've maintained a connection to society and community whilst we're actively cutting them off from their fundamental rights. So how will they vote? I guess the idea is that, again, we're talking about groups of people who are less likely to vote, so lower socioeconomic communities, Māori, and beyond that, we've marginalised them further in prisons. And so requiring prisons to, and this is a change that actually the bill made last year. So the bill has actually had a little bit of success already. The government adopted the prisoner voting aspect of the bill in part last term by allowing prisoners who were sentenced to 3 years or less the right to vote. But part of that, which was, again, a really good green win, is requiring corrections to help people re-enroll when they're released. So as you're released, you get information and you get re-enrolled. So again, you're more likely to vote because you're enrolled to vote. And as people are released, we don't know how they're likely to vote. We don't know which way they're going to go. But the hope with any community who votes in a democracy is that they'll vote based on their lived experience and their interests, so that we kind of, our decisions that we make in government and parliament are serving different communities.
And another big aspect of this bill is the implementation of donor transparency. Do you think that this could also have a big effect on how people are voting by understanding where the money is going towards and where it's coming from towards their parties?
Yeah, so getting big money, especially anonymous big money donations, out of our democracy is a huge green issue. We've seen around the world action on climate crisis hampered by interests of big oil companies, commercial fisheries. We saw that last term with the delay on putting cameras on boats. As it turned out, the lobby pressure on New Zealand First from Tallies was actually playing a part in that. So New Zealanders go to the polls, we each have one vote, and we believe that that should mean that we each get an equal say in democracy, rather than those with the deepest pockets getting to influence political parties in especially a secret way. So New Zealanders deserve to know who's taking a stake in our democracy, and actually those donations need to be massively limited, which is what this bill proposes.
That was the Green spokesperson for electoral reform, Gulruz Garaman, on her bill... on the Green Party's Electoral Strengthening Democracy Amendment Bill. As this bill aims to vastly widen the eligibility to vote, many may question how people such as minors and prisoners could vote and change how our country works. I spoke to Danny Osborne, a political psychology professor from Otago University, about how these groups may approach voting and how we could change our electoral system for the better.
Well, I think generally speaking, you tend to see slightly more liberal individuals voting at younger ages. So in that sense, the younger people tend to vote a little more left-wing than the older population. So yeah, you would expect to see slightly more progressive policies passed in countries with younger voting ages.
What are the issues that those opposed to lowering the voting age are worried about?
Well, I mean, there are some important developmental things that you do have to take into account when considering changing the voting age. So younger people tend to have less impulse control abilities and reasoning skills, etc. So you do have to be mindful about that. Also, another thing to be considered is really kind of the developmental things that are associated with young age and taking that into account.
Do you think that any extra precautionary measures should be implemented if the voting age was lowered, like such as maybe electoral education within schools?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even regardless of how this policy winds up going through through Parliament, I think New Zealand definitely needs some sort of civics education course just to ensure that, you know, we have an educated populace who's informed about the issues.
I've seen a couple of people commenting on how maybe if we did implement a civics election education course, it could also be extended to adults who may not know as much about what they're voting on. Do you think that there is a good way that this could be implemented across the country?
Yeah, I mean, the literature consistently demonstrates that most voters really aren't as educated as you would hope in a democratic society. So anything to get voters more informed about what the issues are, how they affect individuals, you know, it's critical in our democracy to work. We need to ensure that our voters know what they're voting for and how these policies affect them personally.
The bill also mentions allowing prisoners to vote. How could our political systems and results be affected by the included opinions of those in prisons?
Well, I mean, it's ironic because arguably prisoners have more interactions with government authorities than the average individual, and not allowing them to vote deprives them of, you know, having a voice in the system that they're intimately connected with. So in that sense, I can see the argument for allowing prisoners the option to vote, but then at the same time, you know, you have concerns about, you know, punishment and the fact that if you've committed a crime, you've kind of relinquished some of your rights within society. So I think strong arguments on either side of that issue.
I mean, there's no way that prisoners can really vote for a party that would be rooting for them necessarily. The best that they could do is vote for parties that would give them more rights, but that isn't exactly like, you can't vote for a crime party that will like allow murder to happen or anything like that. That's a vast overgeneralization of why people are in prisons, but do you think that those sort of like safety concerns that people may have are justified?
Honestly, no, I don't think so. I mean, like you said, like Labor is not going to come out and say, yes, we support ram raids, or National is not going to do the same thing. Like, it seems like it's a straw person argument in my view of it.
The bill also mentions implementing transparency and safeguards on party and candidate donations. Could this transparency affect the way that voters view parties and candidates?
Yeah, I think definitely. I mean, this is something that's really stalled in the States for quite some time, the U.S., in terms of making sure that campaign contributions are disclosed and clearly communicated to the public. Voters need to know who are supporting these different candidates. Making the contributions more visible and aware to New Zealand citizens, I think it's another important aspect of a democratic society to know where the money's coming from, because the money is inevitably going to influence how the candidates perform once they're in Parliament.
Currently, New Zealanders who have been out of New Zealand for the past 3 years are ineligible to vote. They would need to return to the country every few years to retain their eligibility. Do you think that this needs to be changed, or do you think that it's fair to have people need to return every few years to be eligible?
I mean, I guess if you look internationally and kind of look what other countries do and allow non-residents but former citizens to vote, like, I think New Zealand may be a bit of an outlier in that sense, like having it be a requirement that you need to come back into the country to kind of restore that right. It does seem a bit out of step with the rest of the world. So, yeah, I do think that it's a good idea to make sure that you're a citizen here. You should be able to exercise your right to vote.
Are there any other changes that you think could be made to New Zealand's electoral system?
I guess the one on the top of my mind at the moment might be, you know, extending how long terms are within Parliament. So currently we have elections every 3 years. And in my view, that is a little bit short. It's difficult for parties to get things accomplished in such a short term. Another thing, these elections every 3 years are quite costly. And so if we extended the terms by another year or so, I think it would provide politicians, MPs, etc., a little more time to get stuff established without having to worry about re-election every 3 years.
That was political psychology professor Danny Osborne on the Green Party's Electoral Strengthening Democracy Amendment Bill. Both my interview with Danny and Gaurav Garaman only really scratched the surface of what the Electoral Amendment Bill is calling for, so if you would like to learn more about the changes, you can Google Strengthening Democracy Bill New Zealand to find the rundown.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.